Man and his demand to go to the surface of Titan. Eberle will support his demand, of course. I will have to ask the IAA to inform Eberle that they will not permit it. I will have to show everyone back on Earth that I am not strong enough to keep a simple adventurer from contaminating a pristine new world. Tears blurred his eyes as he commanded the phone to contact Eberle. I must congratulate him and concede my defeat, Urbane thought. Another defeat, with more to come.
Ilya Tymoshenko had no difficulty making his concession message. Sitting at the bar in the bistro, surrounded by a gaggle of supporters, mostly engineers and technicians, he used his handheld to call Eberle. "You've won, and I'm glad," he said to Eberle's pleased image. "Now let's get this bucket into its proper orbit around Saturn." Eberle laughed. "Yes, by all means. We're all counting on you and the technical staff to bring us into Saturn orbit tomorrow."
While Eberle's supporters celebrated his victory with an impromptu picnic out by the lake, Holly was still in Wilmot's apartment, using his computer to comb through the Habitat's personnel files. It took several hours, but at last she had a list of 50 men and women whom she thought could serve as her posse. As she sent the list to Eberle at his quarters, she wondered how good her idea really was. Would the people she had selected actually agree to serve as a posse? It was so hard to pinpoint attributes such as loyalty and responsibility from a person's dossier. Most of the people aboard the Habitat were far from being establishment types. They weren't misfits, as Pancho had called them, but they were definitely free thinkers, self-starters, unwilling to accept discipline imposed by others. "I hope this works," Holly thought. She realized that her very life depended on it.
The victory party was getting rowdy. Several of Eberle's supporters had brought coolers of home-brewed beer to the lakeside picnic, and now the celebrants were getting noisier and more obstreperous, laughing uproariously at almost anything, sloshing beer over one another's heads, even wading into the lake fully dressed, giggling and staggering like college students. Normally, Eberle would have basked in the adulation of his supporters. He didn't drink, and no one dared to douse him with beer or anything else, but still Eberle would have enjoyed every millisecond of the hours-long picnic, except that he knew what was coming after the party ended. So, despite the smile he wore, in the back of his mind he was thinking that he would have to deal with Kananga, and that was going to be far from pleasant. Dangerous, more likely. Morgenthau seemed rather pleased, despite the drunken antics of the staggering, boisterous crowd. Even snaky little Viborg chatted happily with a few of the glowing-eyed young women that clustered about him, Eberle noted. Power goes to some people's heads. In other people, power goes straight to the groin. Morgenthau shouldered her way through a throng of well-wishers crowding Eberle, a plastic cup in her chubby hand. Non-alcoholic, Eberle was certain, probably lemonade. The crowd melted away. Are they being respectful, Eberle wondered, or do they realize that she views all this frivolity with infinite distaste? Once the others had moved out of earshot, she quietly asked Eberle, "Enjoying your triumph?" A knowing little smile dimpled her broad face. He nodded soberly. He had been careful to drink nothing stronger than iced tea all through the picnic. "Now our true work begins," she said in a lower voice. "Now we bring these people under control." Eberle nodded again, less enthusiastically. He knew that she meant that he too would be under control as well. Her control. "I've done all this work, and she thinks she's going to be the true power." He wondered if Wilmot and Holly would turn out to be strong enough to help him.
The following morning, 50 puzzled men and women crowded into the largest conference room in the administration building. Holly, escorted by Gaeta and Cardenas, left Wilmot's quarters to join them. After a detour to their own apartments for a shower and a change of clothes, they could see Kananga's security officers following them at some distance, hanging back, but watching their every move as they spoke into their handhelds for instructions from Kananga. Holly thought of vids she had seen of lions tracking a herd of gazelles, waiting for a weak one to falter so they could pounce. Eberly met them at the building's front door, and together they walked past the human resources offices where Morgenthau should have been, to the conference room. There weren't enough chairs in the conference room for everyone, and the 50 people Holly had selected were mostly on their feet, making the packed room feel hot and sweaty with the press of too many bodies, and they were decidedly unhappy. "What's going on?" one of the men demanded as soon as Eberly stepped through the door. "Yeah, why do you want us here? We're not going to miss the orbit insertion, are we? It's set for a few hours from now." Eberly made a placating gesture with both hands as he squeezed through the group and up to the head of the table. Holly, with Gaeta and Cardenas still flanking her, waited near the door. "Hey, isn't that the fugitive?" someone said, pointing at Holly. "The security people want her. She must have turned herself in." Holly said nothing, but it frightened her to be considered a fugitive, a criminal who has to be turned over to the authorities. "What's she doing here? Maybe Eberly's got her to give herself up. Then why are we here? What's he want with us?" Gradually, they all turned toward Eberly, who stood in silence behind the unoccupied chair at the head of the table, his hands gripping the chair back, waiting for their mutterings to cease. At last he said, "I've asked you here because I need your help." Pointing down the table to Holly, he said, "Miss Lane has been falsely accused. Colonel Kananga is the one who should be arrested." "Kananga? But he's the chief of security." "That's why I need you," Eberly said. "I want you to form a committee, a posse. We will go to Kananga's office and arrest him." "Me? Us? Arrest the chief of security? This has got to be some kind of joke, right? What about the rest of the security staff? You think those goons are going to stand by and let us arrest their boss?" Eberly said, "The 50 of you should be enough to discourage the guards from interfering. After all, they aren't armed with anything more dangerous than their batons. I heard they're all martial arts specialists. I don't see why I have to get involved in this. You're the chief administrator now. You do it." "As chief administrator, I'm drafting you to serve." "The hell with that. I'm not going to get my face punched in just because you've got a gripe with the security chief. Get some other suckers to do your dirty work." One of the women said, "Anyway, you're not really the chief administrator yet, not officially, not until Professor Wilmot swears you in." "But I need you to arrest Kananga," Eberly pleaded. "It's your duty as citizens."
"Duty, my ass. You wanted to be head of this community. You do your duty. Leave me out of it."
"Do it yourself,"
a bellicose red-faced man thundered.
"We didn't ride all the way out here to Saturn to help you set up a dictatorship."
But they turned away from Eberly and began filing past Holly through the door, grumbling and muttering.
"Wait,"
Eberly called uselessly. Hardly any of them even hesitated. They hurried by, leaving the conference room, most of them avoiding Holly's eyes as they left. Eberly stood at the head of the table, watching them leave. Morgenthau has all the offices bugged, he realized. Kananga will know about this failure before the last of them leaves the room.
Saturn orbit insertion. Unheeding of politics, uncaring of human aspirations and activities, oblivious to the hopes and fears of the 10,000 people aboard the habitat, Goddard fell toward the ringed planet, gripped in Saturn's massive gravity well, sliding down into its preordained orbit just outside the ring system. 500,000 kilometers away, a jagged chunk of ice-covered rock half the size of the habitat was also falling into an orbit that would bring it squarely into Saturn's brightest, widest ring. In the tidy, efficient command center, Timoshenko scowled at the data his console screen showed him.
"We're picking up more dust than predicted," he said.
Captain Nicholson nodded, her eyes fixed on her own screens.
"Not to worry. It's causing abrasion of the hull."
"Within acceptable limits. Once we're in orbit, we'll be moving with the dust, and the abrasion level will go down." Timoshenko saw that the navigator and first mate both looked more than a little worried, despite the captain's calm assurance. If the abrasion causes a break in one of the superconducting wires, the first mate said, it could cause our radiation.